Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Finals!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
Brand new week of Drive Time Sports, but it's the same old story with the World Series.
Bregman 1-for-4 tonight. First pitch. And Alex lines this in the left center field. That's a base hit. Kershaw around third and coming home. Ethiop with the baseball. The throw to the plate. Not in time. Astros win. Astros win. Alex Bregman comes through with a walk-off RBI single. And the Astros win 13-12-10. They lead the World Series 3-2.
Westwood One's coverage of Game 5 last night. Alex Bregman bringing in the game-winning run. The Astros topped the Dodgers 13-12 in 10 innings, falling in line, Travis, with what has been the most epic World Series I can remember watching. I'd probably have to go back to 1991 for the Twins and the Braves to think of a World Series that matched this type of electric drama. It's been insane.
Yeah, it's been incredible the way these two teams are so evenly matched, the way that they've battled. And last night, 13-12, and both teams just out of gas with their bullpens. Starting pitching was awful in that game. And when that's the game we get where it's highs and lows, Dodgers jump out early. You think with Kershaw on the mound, they're going to lock it up, and then here come the Astros.
Yeah, Kershaw goes 4 2/3 last night, gives up 6 earned runs and 4 hits. Dallas Keuchel was not much better. He goes 3 2/3, gives up 5 hits and 3 earned runs. And so now we go to Game 6 tomorrow night. It's going to return to Chavez Ravine. I believe the Dodgers are a different team at home. Here's the thing that strikes me most, though. The Astros are very, very good at home. And now they have to win one more on the road. If you got to roll out someone, you want Justin Verlander, who has never lost while wearing a Houston Astros uniform. The Astros lock this up tomorrow?
No. I think the Dodgers win tomorrow. We get to a Game 7, and you're right about the Astros. One home playoff loss, and that was Game 4 to the Dodgers. So they're very good at home. On the road, though, like you said, they're a different team on the road. Offensively, they're not as good on the road.
Yeah, I don't know which way this series is going to go. You can't predict this series. I still say the team that wins tomorrow wins the series. Because
that's how I feel.
This is the way I always look at sports when I'm talking about a series. And I said whoever won Game 3 would win this series. That being said, I did not expect the Dodgers to win Game 4 after they lost Game 3. Anytime you have a series that goes 7 games, you favor the home team. Anytime. And if the Dodgers somehow get past Verlander tomorrow, which is going to be very difficult to do, that means they log a win against Keuchel, you log a win against Verlander. That's a disaster for the Houston Astros. But that being said, there is no one I would rather have out on the mound tomorrow night if I am the Houston Astros than Justin Verlander. With that being said, the balls seem to have a little extra juice. They seem to be a little bit more slick. I don't know if it's the stamping. I don't know if it's the stitching. Something's up with these baseballs, and because of it, we have had electrifying offensive baseball through 5 games.
Yeah, a routine pop fly for Houston goes out of the stadium. Puig's one-handed lunging ball goes out. So, like you said, the balls might be just a little bit juice for more offense.
Maybe so. Although we have had some brilliant, brilliant baseball up to this point, and we'll talk about that a little bit more here in just a moment. Now, with that being said, on the show today, we are going to talk a lot of World Series baseball, but we have to start talking college football tomorrow. We get the first college football playoff rankings. Quickly, give me your top four.
Notre Dame is in the top four, along with Alabama, Georgia. I don't know who I'd put in. Who am I missing?
Think about it.
Ohio State.
Is that who you're going to go with? Because that's my top four.
Because Ohio State's the team I picked to win it all at the start of the year. And I think that's my four right there.
Well, JT Barrett looked great Saturday in a come-from-behind effort to top Penn State. We'll talk about that coming up next segment here on the show. Let's move over to talk NBA basketball here for a moment to get things off and rolling. Did you see what happened to the Cleveland Cavaliers last night?
They're in a little bit of a slump.
A little bit of a slump. I think that would be an understatement. The Cavaliers suffering a blowout loss at the hands of the New York Knicks. Is it too early to start worrying? Absolutely. We're talking about an 82-game season. But the Cavaliers dropped to 3-4 last night. The New York Knicks pick up a 114-95 win. This is something to monitor. Are there problems in Cleveland right now?
I think it's going to take the time for this team to kind of just gel and figure out what they're going to do offensively. I still don't think they know what to do with Kevin Love and the J.R. Smith situation. And Dwayne Wade's just not good.
They don't have a point guard.
No, that's the problem.
They don't have a point guard. They didn't have a point guard last year. I was on two shows this weekend talking Cleveland Cavalier basketball. That's a weird topic, but that's all some of the shows that we branch out and help each other with. That's the topic right now with the NBA. And the fact of the matter is the Cleveland Cavaliers stink in the backcourt. It's that simple. Tyronn Lue is going to flirt with the idea of moving LeBron James to a point guard full-time this season because he almost has to. And when I say he almost has to, that means playing Kevin Love at the 4, Tristan Thompson at the 5. I don't know, maybe you go Jeff Green at the 3 and J.R. Smith and LeBron James in the backcourt. I don't know, but Tyronn Lue is going to have to get creative. This is a topic I didn't think we'd be talking about. And if you're a Celtic fan, it makes you sick because without Gordon Hayward, you're not better than this Cavalier team. With Gordon Hayward, you're better than this Cavalier team. No question.
Yeah, and the team, it looks great. Oh, he's in Milwaukee.
And Orlando.
Yeah, the Milwaukee Bucks realistically have a shot to win the East. It's crazy that sounds because they're going to get Jabari Parker back.
Giannis Antetokounmpo.
MVP right now.
So far, yes, yeah. Yes. So there's some storylines floating around the NBA. Full slate of games tonight. The Utah Jazz will make their return to KOAL fresh off of their victory over the Los Angeles Lakers on Saturday. Donovan Mitchell proved to be the best rookie on the court Saturday night, even better than Lonzo Ball, who just really never got into the rhythm. I don't know if you watched the game or not. Lonzo had a couple of opportunities in that third quarter to get the Lakers within one possession or even tie that basketball game, made a couple of mistakes. Donovan Mitchell was very good, and the Jazz got the win. They're now 3-3, haven't won on the road, haven't lost at home.
Yeah, and that's been the story for the Jazz, I think, for the last couple of years, is very good at home, and on the road, they're not very good. And they drop games on the road they shouldn't. That hurt them in the long run in the standings.
8-point favorite tonight as they play host to the Dallas Mavericks. Again, right here, David Locke will bring you the play-by-play call. Dallas 1-6 so far this season. They have not won on the road. And again, the Jazz unbeaten at Vivint Smart Home Arena. Outside of the Jazz and Mavericks, plenty of NBA basketball to get excited about. The San Antonio Spurs will take on the Boston Celtics. The Spurs, they got smacked in the face over the weekend. But again, they're 4-2, 2-2 away from their friendly confines. They'll go to the TD Garden. Also, we get Minnesota at Miami. The Nuggets will take on the Knicks. We get the 76ers at the Rockets. The Hornets will battle the Grizzlies. The Orlando Magic, who are 4-2 on the season, they take on the New Orleans Pelicans, who are sitting at 3-3. Also tonight in the 8 o'clock hour, we get Toronto, one of the funnest teams, I think, to watch in the NBA right now. They take on the Portland Trailblazers. Nightcap tonight. This is a fun one. You get the Golden State Warriors and the Los Angeles Clippers, two top teams in the Western Conference. In fact, this could be a preview of the Western Conference Championship.
Yeah, two teams coming off strange losses to the Detroit Pistons.
Strange, right?
Yeah, the Pistons, that back-to-back for the Pistons, Clippers and Warriors, and they get it done.
Insane. No one could have predicted that. That's a quick runaround of everything that's happening in the national sports front. We also have some NFL football tonight. It was kind of a crazy week in the NFL as well. The Cowboys are knocking off the Washington Redskins. If we get time, we'll talk about that and the importance of that game. But tonight, it is the Broncos and the Chiefs. The Chiefs enter 7-point favorites at home. No way Denver goes into Arrowhead and gets a win, right? No way.
There's no way. It's kind of a must-win for the Broncos, I think.
Maybe a must-win for the Chiefs. This is a monumental game as far as the AFC West goes, so we'll jump into some NFL football talk as well on the show today. We're going to break for just a moment. When we return, we're going to talk Game 5 of the World Series, get you set up for Game 6 tomorrow. Steve Bordstein of Fox Sports 1340 in New Mexico will join us when we return. KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Reporting from the KOAL newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. And we will begin on the junior college soccer field. And the USU Eastern men's soccer team's 2017 season came to an end on Friday as they suffered a 3-0 loss to the College of Southern Nevada. The Eagles lost in the semifinals of the conference tournament, which was taking place in Henderson, Nevada. CSN got on the board early with a goal from Luis Olandez. That came off an assist from Oscar Rodriguez. And Southern Nevada never looked back. Friday's loss completes what was an up-and-down season for the USU Eastern men's soccer squad. which included a number of wins being vacated during the regular season, which ultimately dropped the men's squad to the number 4 seed in conference play. Overall, the team finishes 4-13-2 due to the wins which were vacated. USU Eastern Soccer had a couple of marquee victories in the season, and before the wins were vacated, actually had a chance to play host to the conference tournament. Ultimately, the team was seen as one of the front runners in the conference tournament. Now we stick with soccer, but we move over to the women's side of the field, and despite falling short in the conference championship game to Snow College, the USU Eastern Lady Eagles had a very productive weekend. It started on Friday as they went toe-to-toe with Salt Lake Community College in the opening round of the conference tournament, and after ending regulation in a 1-1 tie, the two teams battled to another tie in the first overtime and again in the second overtime, leading to penalty kicks, when USU Eastern came out on top 7-6. Now, the thrilling victory sent the Lady Eagles into the conference championship game against Snow College, and unfortunately for the Lady Eagles, they were shut out in a 5-0 loss to bring an end to the season. That marked the third loss to Snow College this season. The first two came 2-0, the third one coming 1-0. Stay tuned to Castle Country Radio. We'll catch up with USU Eastern soccer coach Ahmed Bennett in the coming days to recap the 2017 season. We move over to volleyball, and the USU Eastern Lady Eagles wrapped up the regular season with back-to-back losses on the road both Friday and Saturday, this time in straight sets to CSI, followed by a straight set loss to Salt Lake. USU Eastern wraps up the regular season with a record of 17-9, and they will now prepare for the Scenic West Athletic Conference Championship Tournament, which will actually take place this week. The Lady Eagles, who have had a standout season, will travel to Snow College in Ephraim on Friday and Saturday. They'll enter the conference tournament, the number 4 seed, which puts them against Colorado Northwestern in the opening round. That'll be Friday at 11 a.m. A win would move the team into the second round against Southern Nevada again on Friday. That would be at 4 p.m. And another win would put them in the conference championship game. That would be Saturday at 1 p.m. Stay tuned to Castle Country Radio for more on the USU Eastern Lady Eagles volleyball squad. The high school football season may be over here in the Castle Country, as both Carbon and Emory suffered losses in the opening round, but the 3A state championship tournament continued over the weekend. Friday night, it was the number 1 seed from the 3A North, Morgan, defeating Richfield 27-13. Richfield got to the second round of the state championship tournament by topping Emory back on October 19th. Juab shut out Union in a surprise 31-0. That sets up a conference semifinals matchup rather between Morgan and Juab. That'll take place this Friday. The Manti Templars season came to an end. The number 5 seed from the 3A South suffered a 34-21 loss to Summit Academy, and it was Juan Diego edging out Grantsville 14-13. That'll set up a Summit Academy and Juan Diego semifinal. All of these games will take place this weekend. The state championship will then take place next week at Southern Utah University in Cedar City. You can find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
Live from the KOAL Newsroom in Price, Utah, it's Drive Time Sports on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Take that for data.
Back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL, 107.3 FM, 750 AM. We're going to move over to college football on the eve of the first college football playoff rankings. They'll be released tomorrow night. Now, Travis, I know you shouldn't get too worked up about these, because the first rankings always look completely different than the final college football playoff rankings. But looking at the AP, we'll just look at the top 10 for the sake of this argument. In fact, we'll go top 15 for the sake of this argument. Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, Wisconsin, Notre Dame. That's 1-5. 6 is Clemson, Penn State, Oklahoma, Miami, TCU. 11-15, Oklahoma State, Washington, Votech, Iowa State, and Central Florida. Any problem with that top 15?
No. I think the AP is a little bit better than the coaches' poll. Where
coaches' poll's out of whack.
Yeah, Notre Dame's 8 in the coaches' poll.
Give me a break.
That's ridiculous.
Give me a break.
Absolutely a joke.
Notre Dame is number 8. Oklahoma is number 9. There's a big difference, actually, between the AP top 25 and the coaches' poll. In fact, the top 4 is the same. Clemson is number 5. They're number 6 in the AP.
No.
Miami is number 6 in the coaches poll. They're number 9 in the AP. And really, the coaches poll means absolutely nothing. In fact, the College Football Playoff Committee will look at the AP top 25 more than they will look at the coaches poll. So looking at the first off unbeaten teams, Alabama number 1, which I don't believe they should be. I don't believe Alabama Georgia's should be number better. 1. I'm not even going to go as far as saying Georgia's better, but I will go as far as saying Georgia has a more impressive resume than Alabama.
Yes, they do.
Okay, we're basing Alabama being the number 1 team in the country based off what we've seen over the last 3, 4, 5 years, and that's not right. Georgia should be number 1. Bama's going to get number 1. They're going to be number 1 when the first rankings are revealed tomorrow night. But Bama and Georgia are number 1 and number 2, and they're both unbeaten. We would have to go down to number 4 for Wisconsin to find our next unbeaten, and then we would have to go to Miami at number 9 to find our next beaten after that. Unbeaten after that. After that, it's number 15 with Central Florida. So let me throw these teams out there. The unbeatens: Bama, Georgia, Wisconsin, Miami, Central Florida. Which of those teams will remain unbeaten throughout the season?
Alabama.
See, I got to go Georgia. I got to go Georgia. I think Georgia beats Alabama. I could be wrong. I could be completely off. And maybe I'm sipping the Georgia Kool-Aid based on the fact that I've watched this team play legitimate competition. And you take a look at Bama's schedule so far this year. It's been terrible. They did beat Florida State. DeAndre Francois goes out of that game at halftime. Look at what has become of Florida State. They're not good.
No.
They're not good at all.
They're not even going to go to a bowl game.
No. They beat Fresno. They beat Colorado State. Conference schedule so far this year: Tennessee, Arkansas, Texas A&M, Ole Miss, Vanderbilt. I mean, it's not good. They haven't beat anyone of any significance. Now, they get LSU this weekend, top 20 team with a decent defense. They get Mississippi State next weekend on the road. So it starts to get a little bit more difficult. But before we get to the end of the season, got to throw out Daunted Mercer in there.
Yeah, Mercer's a good team. Should give Alabama all they want.
Sarcasm, just a little.
Why are they playing
Mercer? November 18th, they play Mercer.
Yeah, that's
November 18th.
That can't happen.
But Bama, I believe, is number... I'm going to say that they're number 2 behind Georgia. Either which way, however you want to slice it or dice it, they're number 1, they're number 2. Wisconsin will not finish unbeaten.
There's no way.
I guarantee you this team will not finish unbeaten. They get Indiana this next weekend, who proved to be a solid opponent for Michigan. Iowa proved to be a solid opponent for Penn State. They get Michigan, they get Minnesota. Looks great there, right? They have to get through the Big Ten championship, and they will not. They will not finish the season unbeaten.
Just asking a whole lot from them.
Miami's not going to finish unbeaten because they're not going to beat Notre Dame. Probably should have lost on Saturday to North Carolina. So as far as the unbeatens go, I believe we have one unbeaten in the college football playoff rankings when it's all said and done. See, that was a really long route to get to that point, but that's where I was going with when taking a look at the unbeaten teams. We're going to have one, and that will be the SEC champion. The SEC champion will be the lone unbeaten in the college football playoffs. Now we can take a look at some of the one-loss teams. The best one-loss team in the country is?
Notre Dame.
I agree with you. 100%. Notre Dame not only made USC look very, very average, if not below average. They beat a very talented NC State team, one of the top rushing defenses in the league. And again, that offensive line was brutal. They were mighty. Josh Adams eclipsed 200 yards, barely even played in the second half. Notre Dame is legit. Notre Dame's schedule from here on out, they should. I mean, they get Miami, who's a top 10 team.
They'll run through Miami.
I think Miami's a little overrated.
Yeah, Notre Dame's not losing the rest of the year. I won't even worry about the Stanford game as well because they will beat Stanford.
I think they will as well. I think they will. When Bryce Love is not playing, Stanford is a completely different team. But I like the Irish to run the table over the next 4 weeks. Knock off Wake Forest, obviously, this Saturday. At Miami is probably their stiffest challenge next to at Stanford, and then they get Navy at home. So Notre Dame, I believe, will be there with one loss. Ohio State, are they the second best one-loss team?
They're very good. Yeah, I think they are. Right behind Notre Dame is the second one-loss team. Yes, they are.
Now, if I have to make a prediction as to what the rankings will look like tomorrow, I would say Bama 1, Georgia 2, Notre Dame 3, Ohio State 4. If I'm going off of what I think they should look like, it would be Georgia 1, I guess Alabama 2. Again, I slice it or dice it either which way. Notre Dame 3 and Ohio State 4. That's what I would say they should look like. I do believe Notre Dame is going to be 3. I think the College Football Playoff Committee is going to recognize the fact that the Irish have played a brutal schedule and they have pounded two ranked teams. First time since like 1988, they have beat two ranked teams back to back, two top 15 teams back to back. It's been a long time.
Yeah, they made them look silly.
They did. They did it with ease. Outside of that, you still have Clemson. They're legit defensively. Don't count out Dabo. That's the ACC. The ACC is going to have something to say about the college football playoff rankings at the end of the year. Penn State is now behind the eight ball because they suffered a loss to Ohio State. Penn State last year wins the Big Ten, and they don't go to the college football playoff. It's still possible that Penn State could sneak in and not play in the Big Ten championship. I don't think the playoff committee does that again. This loss on Saturday for Penn State was horrible. The worst possible time for this team to suffer a loss. And looking at what is remaining on Penn State's schedule, they get Michigan State on the road. Never easy to go to East Lansing. So you got to make sure you take care of business this weekend. But then you get Rutgers, Nebraska, and Maryland.
They should win all those games, but the Michigan State game one's tricky. Coming off that devastating loss to Ohio State where you just choke it up with everything on the line. I mean, if they get past Ohio State, they're
clean,
home free.
Definitely. The only thing you have to worry about is winning the Big Ten championship from that point on. That's it. Ohio State on the flip side, they have Iowa. They get Michigan State at home, Illinois, and Michigan. Ohio State is in the driver's seat. Even if they lose one of those four games coming up, they can lose a conference game and still play for the conference championship now because they will hold the tiebreaker over Penn State. Yeah. That game accounted for so much. And I just don't see the college football playoff committee putting in a one-loss team that does not play for their conference championship in over a team that is coached by Urban Meyer. I'll even take it one step further. I don't believe the college football playoff committee has enough guts to put a one-loss non-conference title team in that's not Notre Dame. Notre Dame's a different scenario, but a team that doesn't play for their conference championship and has one loss. If Urban Meyer doesn't coach Ohio State, the Buckeyes aren't there last season. If Nick Saban or Urban Meyer coach team has one loss and they don't play for the conference championship, they will get the benefit of the doubt from the college football playoff committee, not Penn State. I think they're done. I know some crazy things can happen, but as long as Ohio State runs the course or at least wins the Big Ten championship, I just don't see Penn State getting there. I'm really curious to see where they're at tomorrow night.
Yeah, Penn State's route is very difficult now with that choke job against Ohio State. And you're right. With everything you just said, there's no way you can put them in over the Big Ten champ. There's no way.
I don't think so. And the other thing to consider here is Wisconsin. Because say Wisconsin loses one game and they go to the Big Ten championship, how do you put Penn State in over that team?
You can't.
Like I think this loss for Penn State, where if you're a Nittany Lion fan, you're looking at it, they're number 7 in the country right now, you say, yeah, they still have a chance. Yeah, I guess logistically speaking, they do. But to me, it would define all logic to put them back in there. It really would, based on the fact that you want to make conference championships mean something. If Wisconsin was to lose one game from here on out, and that one game being the Big Ten championship, unless it's to Penn State, which it's not going to be because Ohio State's not going to lose twice, you're done.
Mm-hmm.
You're done. Now, Michigan State could really make things interesting still. But outside of that, it's a clear one-pony race for Ohio State. A couple of weeks ago, I mentioned the scenario. Is it closer to happening? Three Power 5 conferences being left out of the college football playoff.
It's possible.
It seemed like a long shot when I brought it up 3 weeks ago. But now looking at it, I believe a one-loss SEC team that doesn't win the conference championship gets in because odds are, in my opinion, that one-loss team is going to be Alabama. Notre Dame runs the table. They get in.
There's two spots. Two left.
There's one left because I'm assuming that a one-loss SEC school would get in.
So there's your two and it's Notre Dame, so you're fighting for one spot. Who's it going to be?
Ohio State or Clemson. That's who I think this narrows it down. Now, college football, it's never that simple, right? Something always happens. And we have a huge weekend coming up. We've got to get out for a quick commercial break. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. We'll come back, put the final touches on this edition of the show.
In 5, 4, 3, 2.
I'm Joe Wade Formicola, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
Zero name, no gimmicks.
On 750 AM, KOAL.
So I came to the grave.
We are back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. We are talking about, the World Series. Game 5 of the World Series last night. Once again, just a off-the-wall, insane game that had a little bit of everything. If you thought Game 2 was crazy, well, you should have watched Game 5, that's for sure. Joining us right now to talk about that and more, we have Steve Bortstein of Fox Sports 1340 in New Mexico. He's been kind enough to join us throughout the year to talk Major League Baseball, so it only makes sense that he joins us on the final Monday of the year as we gear up for Game 6 tomorrow night. Steve, as always, a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for the time. I appreciate it a lot.
I look forward to the conversations throughout the entire year, especially now that we gear up for that pivotal Game 6. I always view Game 6s, especially when the team that has 3 wins is going on the road. Game 6, to me, always decides the series. I know it may be premature to say that. Obviously, if the Astros get the win, the series is over. But if the Dodgers get the win, they're at home for Game 7. And obviously, it would favor them getting past Verlander.
Well, and if the format was designed that way, I mean, that's why they created the 2-3-2 format. And if you're the Dodgers right now, okay, mission accomplished. It's 2-3-2. You know, they've got the lead. Home field advantage still belongs to the Dodgers because they're going home for Game 6 and possibly Game 7. It's a little different, though. It feels different. And I'll say that because looking at the weather forecast for Tuesday and possibly Wednesday in Los Angeles, far different weather than what we saw for games 1 and 2. Game 1, game time temperature, 98 degrees. Game 2, game time temperature, 93 degrees. Game 6 and 7, mid-60s, mid to upper 60s, cloudy. So the weather is going to be a significantly different factor than what we saw in games 1 and 2. And why is that a factor? Because of what we keep hearing about the baseballs. We keep hearing about the baseball not being as easy to grip. Maybe it has a little more slickness to it. Maybe the threading on the ball is a little bit different. Well, that might not have mattered so much in games 1 and 2 if it's a little bit heavier. If it's hotter, maybe the ball does play a little bit better. So you go to games 3, 4, and 5 in Houston. Conversely, it's cooler. Conversely, there's not as much wind. Conversely, the ball doesn't have as much adverse effect on it. Okay, now you see what we saw in the games 3, 4, and 5. You see these incredible scores. You see the home runs just flying out of Minute Maid Park. You see the game differences. Now we go to games 6 and 7. Now, ball's going to be different. Ball's not going to be as hot. Ball's not going to carry maybe a little bit differently. Maybe the slickness of the ball is a little bit different now. So I think all of these things you have to take into consideration. When you look at how the games have been played over the last 72 hours now, you had a 13-12 game in Game 5. You had a 6-2 game in Game 4. You had a 5-3 game. So the ball is a little bit different. Maybe Yu Darvish's slider certainly didn't work at all. There's a lot of different things that are going to play into factor tomorrow night. The big factor is, how do you get to Justin Verlander? And that's going to be the Dodgers' big monumental task tomorrow night.
If we talk about Game 5, which again had just a little bit of everything, the Dodgers put themselves in a position to steal another one on the road. And the Astros have been so good all throughout the entire season, postseason, regular season, at home. The Dodgers found themselves in a really unique situation to knock off Houston 2 out of 3 times on the road. It's something that I didn't think would be possible, but they definitely positioned themselves to do it. What went right for the Dodgers last night, which they must, I guess, move over and implement in Game 6 to get to a Game 7?
You and I have talked about Cody Bellinger and sort of the getting out of the slump a little bit. Cody Bellinger found his stroke. That triple that he hits late in the game, that perks him up. Culberson. I mean, how great has he been in limited opportunities right now? So I think he's been a big factor here. Defensively, you know, look, the Dodgers, really, the big thing for them, with the exception of a couple of errors, and both teams have made a couple in this series, defensively, this infield has been pretty superb. I mean, you know, Justin Turner's made a couple of tough plays. He's had to put himself into some tough situations in the hot box there. But he's played extremely well, I thought, defensively. Maybe not so much offensively. He's had some opportunities, but hasn't come through in the clutch. But I thought defensively, I've been impressed with what I've seen from the Dodgers this postseason. Again, you know, you talk about what went right. Cody Bellinger went right. Logan Forsythe. I mean, who would have guessed that? Jock Peterson. What a revelation he's turned out to be. For all the talk we've done about, you know, Yasiel Puig's turnaround, look at the turnaround of Jock Peterson from the last time we really saw him, you know, day to day, late last season until now. He swings, okay, he still swings at some questionable pitches, but he makes much better contact than he did last year. He's been an absolute revelation at coming back into this series.
Now we flip that over and we take a look at what the Astros have done well. And for me, I mean, honestly, looking at Houston's lineup, but we could talk about Bregman, we could talk about Altuve and Correa. The guy that has been the X factor in this series has been George Springer. He's been so consistent in this series again last night. Honestly, I can't remember the last time a leadoff man has put so much fear in an opposing team. Springer has been sensational in this series, and if I had to vote for an MVP throughout the first five games, I'd probably give it to Springer, Steve.
Yeah, you and I are going to go back and forth on that one, because right now I got to go Bregman. I mean, Bregman has been just the hardest out imaginable. You and I said it last night when we were talking during the game, that if it was any other bat in any other situation other than Bregman, I'd feel okay with it. And Bregman's that guy right now. I agree with you, though, about Springer. And I think the thing that I keep coming back to, you know, is as far as this lineup is concerned, because that's really been the story of this series for me, has been the lineup that, you know, they've put together here. Is just, you know, how well constructed both teams. I mean, both teams have put together pretty solid lineups here. They've done that throughout this series. But you look at that, you know, the top six or seven in that lineup there with Springer and Bregman, Altuve and Correa. Gurriel's been outstanding this series. That lineup's been great. The Dodgers have had some flexibility where they've moved around some pieces in their lineup a little bit. And I thought that moving Puig down a little bit, you and I talked about that the other day, moving Puig down to the seventh spot, I thought that could have perked him up a little bit. The home run that he hit in the 10th inning was in the 9th inning was amazing. I wish he'd have done that more of that throughout the game, but okay. The Dodgers have some moving parts. That's going to be interesting now with Game 6 and 7, possibly. Again, no designated hitter. So does that stifle Houston's ability to score runs now? Because, again, Verlander's not going to swing at anything. We know that.
Right.
So now, do we see maybe a little bit more of an advantage here? Because we know that Rich Hill isn't terrible. He's not great at the plate. But neither team has an advantage now. Neither team's got that extra bat in the lineup now. So with that being said, that may give an advantage back to the Dodgers. Maybe you put Yasiel Puig into that eighth spot, hope for that wraparound a little bit that we saw that worked so effectively in Game 4 the other night. Again, there's just so many things about this series. You know, the play that changes everything in the second and in Game 2. You know, bottom of the 10th, I think Bellinger on second. All these things had so many ramifications that it was just so, it's been so amazing to watch how this series has played out.
Again, we're being joined right now by Steve Bordstein, the host of First Sports and Fox Sports 1340 in New Mexico. We're going to talk about that in just a moment. Steve, as far as the legacy of this World Series, and I know it may be premature to talk about this, I've always been under the impression that the greatest World Series that I remember personally sitting down and watching, I would go all the way back to 1991 with the Twins and the Braves. To me, that was the best World Series I have ever watched. Up to this point, up to this point in time, nobody can tell me otherwise that there has been five more exciting games in a World Series than what we have seen so far this year.
I would agree with that. I mean, I'm a little older than you, so I go back to 1981, Dodgers Yankees 1981. I can see that being one of the ones. To me, this has been, it's tough for us. You know, we have to remain impartial because we're journalists. So, okay, but I have to put that away a little bit because I'm also a Dodger fan. I grew up a Dodger fan. My dad was a Dodger fan. So it's hard for me. I go both directions on this. You know, to me, you know, the most dominant, the greatest World Series ever, it's the one the Dodgers won, 1988. Yay! You know, I can't do that. You know, so this has been like playing a video game, and I don't play video games, but I imagine that this is what playing a video game is like. You know, where anything is possible. You hit reset, you start over, you do it again. That's what this has been like for me. The legacy for me of this series will be dominoes, the domino effect. What one decision means so far down the line. Taking Rich Hill out the fourth inning as opposed to letting him go on in Game 2. Bringing Kershaw back when clearly he might not have been on his best game last night. Giles, bringing him back. Morrow, bringing him out there last night. Taking Giles out. I mean, how many little things, you know, again, we mentioned the Bellinger play in the second inning, and the second base in the 10th inning. How many little things have had a lasting impact on not just that game, but then how everything has played out in the rest of this World Series? Again, if Bellinger scores in the 10th inning, Dodgers are up 2-0. We're not even talking right now. This series is over. You know, so, yeah. I mean, how much of this series is changed on one flick of a domino and watching the domino effect? So I think when you go back and look at this series historically, people are going to look at this as one, as what's the book called? A Series of Unfortunate Events, the Lemony Snicket book?
Yep.
That's what this is. If you're a Dodger fan, it's a series of unfortunate events.
With that being said, and you know, I think this is, there's a deeper answer to this question, but I'm going to throw it at you anyways. Has Dave Roberts been seriously outmanaged up to this point in time of the series, or have the car, you know, has the deck been stacked against him? Because last night, I really don't know what direction you go. I can sit there. You and I were talking last night. I could have said go to Fields for that last out in the you know, the bottom of the 10th inning and take Jansen out because it was obvious that he was done at that particular time. We could talk about not taking Hill out. We could go back and look at some of the decisions that Dave Roberts has made. AJ Hinch, on the flip side, has made some pretty questionable decisions as well as far as the bullpen. It just seems that things happen to fall in place for the Astros over the first five games. So has Hinch outmanaged Roberts substantially in this series, in your opinion?
Hinch's mistakes have not been as magnified as Roberts. Let's try that. They've both made mistakes. They've both made errors as far as handling their pitchers have been concerned, whether it's their starters, whether it's their bench, their bullpen.
Yeah.
Hinch has gotten bailed out better than Roberts has gotten bailed out. Does that work?
Yeah, yeah. So it's not really an idea that Hinch has outmanaged Roberts. He's had better luck. Is that what you're saying? I mean, that's what I gauge from that. He's had better luck.
And Hinch has, and I would say that Hinch has had the benefit of the right batter at the right time. Look, that's how the lineup works. You know, if it's not Bregman, Altuve, and Correa coming up in the 10th, I'm okay. But it is. And now, I mean, in the 9th inning, and it's those guys that Jansen now has to get out in the bottom of the 9th inning. So he expends himself to get those guys out to the point that when he comes up at the bottom of the 10th inning, he's got nothing left.
Yeah.
He's spent. You know, whereas at the same time, okay, yeah, the Astros, here's one for you. You mentioned the most valuable player in this series. How is it not? And all, this is the most bizarre thing in the world to say this here. But if it hadn't been for the home run he gave up last night, how is it not Brad Peacock at this point? The 3 2/3 innings he pitched in game 4, or what was it, game 3? If he doesn't have that game, again, the series is over.
Well, that's a fair point. I do tend to go with Springer a little bit, maybe because last night's fresh in my mind.
But
I get what you're saying. Right, I get what you're saying.
Different people here.
I get what you're saying. The bullpens have been so horrible that Peacock has been marginal, and because of that, he has stood out when we take a look at the bullpen front to back on both sides.
Absolutely. I mean, the bullpens have been a disaster in this series. Kenta Maeda, I mean, remember 3 weeks ago, you and I were talking on this very program. This is simple. You run Kershaw out for 6, you run Morrow, and you run Maeda, and you run Jansen, and it's over. And we're going to win the World Series. Oh my God. Morrow and Maeda, I would put them on my B-League softball team right now.
This is, hopefully this is one of a couple of more conversations to have.
Last night, they threw 417 pitches last night.
Ridiculous. It's a video game.
That's insanity.
It is a video game.
It's a video game. That's what this is. They threw 417 pitches in this game. How is that? That's not even I mean, that's not even durable. I mean, think about that for a second. Okay, 417 pitches in Game 6 last night. Game 1 of this series, there was a total. I'm looking this up as we speak here, so forgive me for a second. I'm trying to look this up here as we speak. In Game 1, 311. No, 211 pitches in Game 1, 411 in Game 6.
Steve, I know this is a very busy week for you. You got the Breeders' Cup coming up as well. Before I let you go, please let the listeners know where they can find more of your work.
Well, okay, first Sports of the Morning here is weekday morning, 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. Mountain Time. It's 9 a.m. to noon Eastern. If you haven't already downloaded the iHeartRadio app, and I can't imagine why you wouldn't have done so already, download the iHeartRadio app and go to our website at foxsports1340.com. First Sports airs weekdays. We talk a lot of national sports. We talk a lot of regional sports. We will be talking Breeders' Cup this week live from Southern California. We will be previewing UFC 217 coming up live this weekend with Michael Bisping taking on George St. Pierre. We will be recapping the World Series, NASCAR, tons of college football, NFL, obviously. So we'll be doing a lot of that this week on First Sports. Again, weekday mornings, 9 a.m. to noon Eastern on our website at foxsports1340.com. Jordan, you mentioned the Breeders' Cup. We also do a horse racing show every Saturday and Sunday morning called The Fast Track, nationally syndicated horse racing show. Again, you can listen to it through the iHeartRadio app. Just go to our website at foxsports1340.com. And for more information on anything going on our station, you can follow me on Twitter at Fox1340AM.
Steve, it's always a pleasure to get you on. I appreciate the time again, and I know we'll do it again soon.
Time for Dodger baseball tomorrow. Let's do it.
Let's do it. One more game at least. This series has to go 7. I mean, you got to do it justice and get it to Game 7. Your friend, my friend, Yaziel Puig, says he guarantees it'll go Game 7. I just want to throw that out there for you. And maybe
our friend.
Yeah, my friend. He's my friend.
You own him. I'm just leasing him.
Steve, a pleasure. We'll do it again soon.
Looking forward to it.
We're going to break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750, the play-by-play home of the USU Eastern Eagles.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, final segment as we close out this Monday edition of the show. Travis tonight, KOAL 107.3 FM, 750 AM. Jazz take on the Mavericks. Mavericks yet to win on the road. The Jazz yet to lose at home. David Locke, Ron Boone will bring you that play-by-play call. But with that being said, Monday Night Football, AFC West showdown, Broncos-Chiefs. Chiefs at 5-2, Denver at 3-3. How do you see this one playing out?
I think Kansas City's going to win the football game because they're at home, and quarterback issues for Denver still linger. Last week, 21-0, Los Angeles beat them. And you can just tell that Trevor Siemian is just not a very good quarterback.
Okay, so Chiefs are favored by 7. Did they cover that spread?
Yes.
I think they covered that spread easily today.
Easily. 2 touchdowns.
And as far as the AFC West goes, it is an important game for both teams. I mean, for as bad as the Broncos have played over the last couple of weeks, they get a win tonight. They're a game behind Kansas City for first place. That's how important tonight's game is. Kansas City gets a win. Well, then guess what? You got a 3-game lead on the Denver Broncos. This is a swing game in the division. This is when you start to see the pretenders and the contenders separate. That's why tonight's game is so big. Broncos, Chiefs, we'll talk more NFL football on the show tomorrow. Thank you to Steve Bordstein for breaking down Game 5 and talking Game 6 of the World Series. We'll be back to do it again tomorrow. For Travis Anderson, I'm Jordan Buscarini. Be safe. We are out.